Welcome to Award Wieners. I'm your co-host, John, joined by the demigod David, who, some say, has committed crimes against hot dogs. This is our night at the Oscars, where we watch Oscar-winning movies while enjoying Oscar Mayer Wieners. It's a celebration of American culinary and cinematic pop culture. In this episode, David and I discuss All the King's Men, winner of the 1949 Oscar for Best Motion Picture. Dave, what's going on?
What crimes have I committed against hot dogs?
Your hot dog recipes, sir, are crimes against hot dogs.
I find them entertaining. So do many listeners. You mean many listener? Just me when I listen to the podcast myself?
You're like, this is a great idea.
Not much is going on. How about you?
Not a lot. I was back in Ohio visiting the folks for a few days. I saw Venom, which is better than you think it would be.
Looks like trash. Why would I? I don't really want to go see that.
I'm not telling you to like make it a priority, but it's okay.
On a scale from 1 to 10, what is it?
It's a Venom.
It's a Venom?
Like a 1 to 10. It's like a 5.5.
Okay, so barely passable. Is Tom Hardy actually good in it?
I think Tom Hardy's fine. He has kind of this weird accent he puts on. Doesn't quite make sense, but it's okay. I would have wanted them to wrap it up into the bigger Marvel universe and have some better pieces to it, but it's okay.
Maybe Sony will learn its lesson and just hand over the stuff to Marvel and let them produce and they can just reap the benefits of it.
I hope so.
I don't see that happening, but I really hope so. Otherwise, we're going to end up with like Spider-Gwen movies without Spider-Man.
That might happen.
Really?
They have that animated movie that's coming out that is a crossover event where a bunch of Spider-Men from different dimensions end up together. I think it's called Spider-Man the Spider-Verse or something like that. Is that the name of that movie?
Enter the Spider-Verse.
Yeah, but it looks okay.
I mean, I'll go see that. He's a fun character. So movies I've seen recently, I've seen a bunch, but I think the one that I think we should talk about is Assassination Nation. Probably not in theaters now. Didn't open very well at the box office. Though it's not a great film, I think there's a lot to discuss about it if you want to have a discussion about gender politics and the internet in our modern age. It's billed as more of a Purge meets Heathers. It's not really. They need to lean into a little bit more of the Purge aspects of it. But overall, I think it'd be a cool movie to see. I probably wasn't the right audience, though. When I saw it, there was literally three people in the theater. I was the only, you know, over 30s white guy. It's probably more for like 17-year-old girls. But you should see it. Check it out. Let us know what you think when you do.
Okay. Dave, so today we're watching All the King's Men. How would you describe this movie?
This movie follows a demagogue as he rises to power and ultimately is killed in the process. How would you describe it?
First, I want you to define the word demagogue.
It's been a long time since I took the GRE. So a demagogue, I believe, is someone who hoards power through populism.
That's not my understanding of the word. My understanding of the word is that they basically play on people's emotions to get them to vote more emotionally. It doesn't mean that there's facts or anything behind what they're actually saying or if they can actually accomplish what they're going to do. They just basically play on people's fears.
I mean, that's exactly what he was doing.
Pretty much. I mean, we see that happening in politics now. Those crazy Democrats are so liberal that they're going to end the world.
You mean a massive mob rule of Democrats?
They're paid protesters.
George Soros.
George Soros is paying Democrats. Okay. Anyway, we should cut all that out because someone's going to believe us.
No, we're going to leave that. We're leave this in. Yeah, if you believe that, Jesus Christ.
If you believe that, I'm sorry, sir or ma'am, you're a fucking idiot. You've been fooled, and that's kind of sort of what happens here. We have a politician who's playing on people's fears. I would say he has demagogic tendencies. That's how he's convincing people to vote for him, but he's actually accomplishing some things, which is different than what's currently happening in politics. Things are actually being accomplished here.
A lot of people would debate you on that, John. I mean, things have been accomplished. Big tax cut and two Supreme Court justices.
We'll wait and see how that tax cut is going to massively increase our debt, as it already has shown that it will.
And you
so that in a few years, there's going to be something called austerity that we're all going to have to go through. So thanks, Trump.
I mean, you're not already doing that in preparation?
Hell yeah, man. I'm saving my money because I damn well know Social Security won't exist when I retire.
Invest in gold, John.
I'm buying coins off the internet.
I'm so sorry, our white right-wing listeners. But you knew this was coming.
Not really. Yeah.
We can agree to disagree on some things.
What I'm also getting at is, what is this politician giving up, or what does it cost for him to accomplish these goals? I think that's really what the story is about. What is he giving up? What is he sacrificing? Is he compromising himself and his morals and beliefs as he achieves what he's achieving?
What did it cost?
Everything.
Yeah, I think that's good. I thought of it along the lines of how power corrupts, is what I thought of it as.
That is definitely one of those questions. So, Dave, as you know, and as maybe some of our listeners know, we like to have a little segment where we walk our hot dogs down the red carpet and show them off. Dave, how is your hot dog dressed tonight?
I am breaking all the rules, John. Breaking them so, so hard.
Is it a crime against a hot dog?
No, it's not a crime against a hot dog. Well, maybe it actually is, now that I think about it. I mean, if you're a hot dog purist, you would want more of the hot dog flavor. I'm going to let you decide. I'm going to tell you what I'm going to do, and you tell me if it's a crime.
Okay.
This movie deals with politics. I want to do something with pork because of the connotation of pork barrel politics. And what I did was I made pork and beans and served it with a toasted bun. I just found a random recipe online and just made it exactly what it said. Add molasses. It's kind of sweet.
That's what I say about you, too.
I liked it. The thing with pork and beans, you can't really eat a ton of it. You can make a very small batch of it. John, what do you think? Is that a crime against hot dogs?
I think it sounds okay. I actually have a sauce that you might want to consider putting on those dogs. Are you familiar with Mambo sauce?
No.
It's a DC sauce. It's from the DC area. I don't know how it came to be. It's kind of this mixture. It's a sweet sauce that's also hot. Maybe spicy molasses. It's not a great way to explain it, but that's sort of the taste of it. It usually goes on wings, but that's something that you might be able to mix into that recipe there.
That sounds pretty good. I'd give it a try.
I've got some. The next time you're in town, we can put some Mambo sauce on some stuff.
Definitely hot dogs. We're just going to have Mambo sauce hot dogs.
I think it would go good on the hot dog that I'm about to tell you about, maybe. In D.C., there's a hot doggeria. Hot doggery. I don't know what the right word is there. But they sell hot dogs. And Obama, it's his favorite hot dog stop. It's called Ben's Chili Bowl. And they have something called a half smoke, which is a hot dog with some more spices in it. It's more along the lines of a sausage. He and his family, according to the sign on the wall in Ben's Chili Bowl, are the only ones who are allowed to eat there for free. Because I'm sure other people ask or say yeah, I know the owner. I can eat here for free. And apparently that's not true. Only one person can eat there for free, and that's Obama.
So the term hot doggeria sounds a lot like something that happens after you eat too many hot dogs.
So maybe hot doggery is a better.
Yeah.
One's more French, one's more Spanish. I feel like we haven't yet figured out what the right word is. But I agree with you. I was thinking that when I was writing that out earlier. I was I don't know if that sounds right.
I mean, I would love to go to Ben's Chili Bowl next time we're there. We'll try out Obama's favorite hot dog.
All right. Sounds good. Along those lines, Dave, do you have any food facts for us?
I do. So I want to talk about pork barrel politics and where that term came from. The term usually refers to when a politician spends money on constituents in return for votes or campaign contribution. And it originally came about in a short story called The Children of the Public, written by Edward Everett Hale. So I read the first chapter of that short story and a couple thoughts about it. One, writing in the 1800s was much different than it is today, and it was very hard to translate what was actually happening in the story. But what I think the metaphor means, and you originally had to say you went to the pork barrel, it was dipping into your savings to pay for things. I think that doesn't quite translate to the way it means now, but that's what it was used in the story, how it was used. Another theory of where that term comes from dates back to the American Civil War, and some people believe that slave owners would pit slaves against each other in contests over a barrel of salt pork. I look for additional sources for that information. I couldn't find it. It feels like everyone is citing the same piece of material. So take that one with a grain of salt. Finally, what is salt pork? Really, it's salted pork belly. It might look like a slab of bacon, but it really isn't. And it's used to add flavorings to food, such as baked beans, which I talked about earlier. I use salted pork in my greens and when I make green beans particularly.
Yeah, just pork barrel in politics typically means a government project that yields jobs or other benefits for a specific location that basically offers up support for a politician. So like, yeah, let's say you and I are on the campaign trail. It's the Cross Bobosh 2020 campaign run. We go to North Carolina and say, we're going to stick a military base here if you vote for us. I don't know why it's called that exactly, but that's what the pork barrel is. Like, we're giving them a barrel of meat, I suppose.
The etymology of the term and how it came to mean what it does today is very confusing. Like I said, it's not used that way in the initial short story. It's used as a metaphor for having dipping to your savings. So at some point, it morphed into something else. So, John, you have a note here. It's mm-hmm. called the Rockefeller Dictum. I have not read this. So what is this?
Well, this is going to be exciting, Dave. So Nelson Rockefeller, who is a rich – see, I can't remember if he was an oil baron or if he was a railroad baron or another kind of baron, but he's an American wealthy baron.
If he's not a pine baron, I don't care.
Yeah. But anyway, he once said that no candidate for any office can hope to get elected in this country being America, without being photographed eating a hot dog. And what he's saying is, eating a hot dog just shows how an American a candidate is. And this has remained true for every president since Franklin Roosevelt. So every president since then has been photographed eating a hot dog. And Franklin Roosevelt himself even served hot dogs to the King and Queen of England when they came to visit the country in 1939. So I've looked this up. There's pictures of every president since Roosevelt eating a hot dog.
That's amazing. That's so good.
Yep.
So I just...
You should watch Trump eat a hot dog. It's like him drinking a bottle of water. It's fucking what? Crazy. Like this weird two-handed weird grip with his tiny little hands jamming it in his mouth.
I think if he eats a hot dog, he holds it by both ends and then bites on it like a corn on a cob.
It's not as weird as that. We'll post a picture of Trump eating a hot dog on the internet. We'll post it on one of our social channels or something.
So I just looked up who Nelson Rockefeller was. I don't know history, apparently. He's the former vice president of the United States for Gerald Ford.
Yeah, and he ran for president several times as well. He comes from a very wealthy family.
He has a very long Wikipedia page, so I don't know. He's probably related to the famous New York Rockefellers somehow.
Oh, yeah, he's an oil baron.
Okay.
But yeah, he's of those Rockefellers.
I was going to make fun of him and be like, is he like the sixth son of the Rockefellers? I was like, oh, wait, no, he's vice president. Never mind.
Yeah.
But it's true. Hot dogs are extremely American. I'm going to serve them anytime a fancy dignitary comes to my house.
Yeah, a half smoke.
A half smoke. What's the fanciest hot dog you can serve, like the queen? A gold-plated hot dog?
That probably exists with, like, pate and caviar or something. I don't know. Grey Poupon, Dave. That's what royals eat.
Yeah, that's smart. This is such a tangent. But I feel like the more you add to hot dogs, the fancier you try to make them, the worse they end up being.
I think there's a balance, because I've definitely had this kind of Japanese-style hot dog where I even forget what they put on it, but these sort of Japanese condiments, and it turned out really well, like spicy mayo and some other things. But I agree with you. There's like a limit on how much can be thrown on a hot dog. I think it's like Chicago, man. The Chidago, maybe a little too much. Kind of like deep dish.
Yeah. I mean, I like deep dish, but I don't love it. It's like a once a year, I'll get it and be like, oh, I'm happy I had this.
Well, I'm not saying deep dish is bad. I'm just saying like it's a lot. And that somehow Chicago likes a lot of toppings on things.
They like big, bold flavors. Malort, hot dogs, a bunch of shit on it, and a pizza that's a lasagna.
Yeah, a 4-inch deep pizza.
What a tangent. All right, let's bring this back in. Let's reel this back in.
So you got to eat a hot dog and be photographed doing it if you want to be president.
Okay. So movie facts. Here are some movie facts about All the King's Men. It was released November 8th, 1949. Its runtime was 109 minutes. The box office revenue was $2.4 million. And it was directed, written, and produced by Robert Rosen. Rosen also directed The Hustler. Paul Newman's in that. I know there's a sequel to it as well. He was a member of the American Communist Party and was twice called before that House Un-American Activities Committee. He ended up blacklisted during his second appearance, named 57 people who were former or current communists.
I love that we have an Un-American Activities Committee.
Yeah.
What is un-American in this day and age? I'm pretty sure everything seems to fly as far as I can tell.
There is a large portion of our population who would say many things are un-American, such as protests.
And then I would tell them to stop citing the Boston Tea Party as the name of their political party.
That's very ironic.
Okay, but we digress.
Yes, so this movie was nominated for 7 Oscars, and it won 3, and those were Best Picture, Best Actor, and Best Supporting Actress. Other movies it went up against for the Oscars, those were Battleground, The Heiress, A Letter to 3 Wives, 12 O'Clock Noon. John, have you seen any of those?
Is it 12 O'Clock High Noon?
12 O'Clock High Noon, yeah.
I don't think I've seen any of those. Is that, that's not High Noon, the Western, is it?
No, it's not, no. I haven't seen any of those either. I did look up what was going on that year. The big contender was The Heiress. I actually downloaded it. I meant to watch it, but then I started and I was like, you know what? I don't want to watch this. So I got like 10 minutes in and stopped. So I'm not going to be able to compare it, but that was the one that was competing against all the Kingsmen. So let's move on to movie trivia. So you can go out and, you know, if you have your Oscar party, you can win something, hopefully. So Robert Penn Warren wrote the book that this movie is based on. It was also remade into a TV miniseries in the USSR in 1971. I couldn't find that, so I really wish I had, because I thought it'd be really cool.
Yeah.
And it was remade in 2006 with Sean Penn. John, have you seen the remake?
I thought about watching it, but it had an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes. And apparently it was stuck in editing for like a year plus. Something happened during the filming and post-production, and that's kind of why it tanked.
I'm glad you told me that. I wasn't going to go watch it either way, but
it's a little more accurate to the person this movie is based on, who we'll talk about in a minute. That version actually takes place in Louisiana, and the version that we watch, it never really says where it is. Like, it's meant to be this everywhere place, Canoma, which I feel is like Kansas and Oklahoma jammed together.
You know, I noticed that because in parts of the film, they're like, he's at state, like talking about the college. He's like, what?
It's like The Simpsons. They're like, Springfield. Then you'll never know where Springfield is.
I have a quiz for you, John. There's only a couple Oscar-winning movies that have been remade.
Okay.
There's 4 of them.
Okay, this is one. Does that count?
I think there's 5 then. 5.
Okay.
So can you guess what they are?
Mutiny on the Bounty is definitely one of them.
Absolutely.
You know, I actually might have to look at the list of Oscar winners real quick to see if I could make a guess.
We've covered one of
them. Oh, Ben-Hur is definitely one of them. I do know that. Hold on. I'm actually pulling up the list of Oscar winners so I can just scan down that quickly and hopefully tell you what they are. Okay, so I'm running down this list. I'm hoping it wasn't Casablanca.
It's not.
I'm going to guess that West Side Story is one of them.
West Side Story is being remade. It's going to be directed by Steven Spielberg, so that's a pretty good guess.
So I don't know if this counts or not, because I think Lawrence of Arabia was a TV series again. I don't know, did that count as a remake?
Not in what I found.
I'm going to guess The Sound of Music.
Maybe they did Sound of Music for TV.
I guess it depends on how you... Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so what I mean by it is like a feature film.
Okay. Titanic?
Soon.
My guesses are mostly musicals because I feel like those are things that get remade. Is On the Waterfront one?
No.
Hamlet.
Yes. Mel Gibson's Hamlet, because the original was with Peter O'Toole.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. And you know you got this one. This is the last one I have. And I think you're overthinking it.
Oh, All Quiet on the Western Front?
No. It was a TV movie. So it still doesn't meet the criteria. I'm going to give
you
a hint.
I don't know, man. Give me a hint.
Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh, the Jackie Chan version?
Yeah, Jackie Chan.
What? Okay. All
right. So...
How could I forget?
I know. It's such a stellar film.
All right, so what are they again? Just, Dave, to recap that.
So here's the ones I have. These are feature films. So we have Mutiny on the Bounty, Ben-Hur, Around the World in 80 Days, Hamlet, and West Side Story is to come. Let's jump down to actor facts and trivia. So Broderick Crawford plays Willie Stark. Crawford gained prominence playing Lenny in a Broadway production of Mice and Men. Later, when that story was going to be filmed, he lost out on the role to Lon Chaney Jr. I think that's kind of sad. This is Broderick's most well-known movie. Crawford won an Oscar for his role in All the King's Men. for horror fans out there, because it is October, he had a role in Universal Studios' Black Cat. That's one of their more famous monster movies. I think that came out in early 30s. I'm a little iffy on that. In World War II, he joined the United States Army Air Corps. He was assigned to the Armed Forces Network, and there he served as the announcer for the Glenn Miller American Band. I thought that was pretty cool. So next is John Ireland, and he plays Jack Burden. Ireland is mostly known for his roles in Westerns. He starred in My Darling Clementine, Red River, Vengeance Valley, and Gunfight at the OK Corral. I swear I've seen probably every one of those, and I cannot remember any of them. They just mold in my mind to one long gun battle. During the McCarthyism era, he successfully sued two TV producers for backing out of deals they made with him for roles. That didn't happen a lot.
Just to make that clear, because he was accused of being a communist, or was a known communist?
I'm not sure. They backed out of having him in roles he was probably accused. He was something of a gray figure. He directed the B movie, The Fast and Furious, which came out in 1958. That was a film about car thieves. And I know you want to know, how does that relate to the Fast and Furious series?
Dave, yeah. How does that relate to the Fast and Furious series?
I'm glad you asked. The producer of the Fast and Furious series liked the title, so he just traded a bunch of stock footage from his movie to the studio in order to get that title. They don't really have anything in common other than that.
Cool. So he just raked in some money.
Yeah, basically. Mercedes...
I just want to interrupt for 1 second. I want everyone to listen to what Dave has to say.
What?
No, just go ahead, Dave. Okay. I wanted to make sure everyone was listening to you.
Okay. I'm glad. Great. Mercedes Cambridge plays Sadie Burke. She won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for this film. And she was nominated the same year for a different movie called Giant.
Wait a second. Don't listen to what Dave has to say. Don't. I was wrong.
I was so wrong. She won an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actress for this film, and she was also nominated in the same category for the movie Giant in 1956. I think more people our age would know her as the voice of the demon from The Exorcist.
Your mother sucks cocks in hell, Terrence, you faithless swine.
I'm sure everyone knows what clip that is. She later became the CEO of the nonprofit Livergren Foundation of Bensalem, Pennsylvania. That organization treats alcoholism and drug addiction. Cambridge had dealt with alcoholism through her adult life, and that's how she got involved with that organization. So, John, you have some history for us.
This story, the story of Willie Stark in this movie, is actually largely based on the Louisiana governor, Huey Long, a.k.a. the Kingfish. Long is a controversial figure in Louisiana history. Some did consider him a demagogue. There are a lot of thinly veiled similarities with the main character of the movie, Willie Stark. So Long, like Willie, was a populist, which meant that he focused on people's everyday needs. Some considered him a socialist. I kind of can see that. He did a lot of different things for the people. He spent a lot of money in Louisiana that Louisiana probably didn't have, but what he did was triple funding for LSU. So he really built out the campus and set up the university in a state that didn't have that previously. Did a ton of public work projects, including building roads and bridges, provided healthcare of some kind to lots of different people who couldn't otherwise afford it, and he vastly improved literacy in the state. It was like 20% of the state was literate before he came into the office, and it was much, much higher, like 80 or 90% towards the end of his time. He's kind of a controversial figure because it was said he was a bit of a dictator and a bully. So basically, he said it's my way or the highway and eliminated anyone who disagreed with him in different methods, sometimes physical methods. His story, by and large, mirrors the life of Willie Stark right down to the exciting end, which we'll talk about when we get there. I guess one other fact. Tied to movies, he was frequently caught rigging elections using voter names such as Babe Ruth, Clara Bow, Charlie Chaplin, and other celebrities.
That's so stupid. You couldn't just make a name up? How about Charlie Bow?
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say Clara Chaplin.
One of the things I want to just comment on real quickly is the idea that I personally think he was a socialist. One of the things he did was he proposed a law limiting the amount of wealth a person could have. I believe it was to 50 million. And he did also talk about income redistribution. He had a lot of very far left leaning policies, but in addition to being, like you said, a bully.
He really was that populist. You could say a socialist too, because he did a lot of things for the benefit of everybody. with the idea that the state's job was to pay for those things and provide them.
With that background, we are ready to jump into the movie.
Okay. Let's start this political thriller.
The Manchurian Kingfisher? All right, so the film begins with journalist Jack Burden, played by John Ireland. Jack is sent to cover Willie Stark, a rural firebrand running for county treasurer. They're in, again, Cahoma. It's just a made-up place. Can you describe Jack for the audience?
Jack is kind of just out of college. I think he's still idealistic. He's a journalist who wants to show what's going on, dig up the dirt, expose corruption, and make good happen.
I think that's a pretty good description. I struggle a little bit with him. Maybe it was the acting. I was like, what is he thinking? What's going on here?
He's kind of a bland character.
Yeah.
The other note is he comes from like a well-to-do family. He's pretty wealthy or just has the means to do things. He went to college in a time where most people probably didn't go to college.
One of the things that I noticed immediately off the bat in this scene and throughout the whole movie is that Jack wears suits that don't fit him. His coat is like three times the size it should be on him. And he's like just like hanging off him.
That's his zoot suit, my man.
It looks so bad. And I was like, maybe he's doing this to try to fit in with people, but it was a really odd costuming choice.
I wonder if it was just the style of the time. Like, it did have like big shoulder pads.
We all went through baggy jeans phase, so we know about bad style.
We do. We really do.
Do you have those JNCOs, John?
Gotta have my JNCOs. 40 inches around the bottom.
Oh my god. Okay. So you know those are really expensive now, right?
I do.
Ugh.
I wanted to have a JNCO party with someone, and we looked up what it cost to get JNCOs, and it was like $150 a pair. Well, they recently went out of business, by the way. They were totally still operating until maybe 2 or 3 years ago.
That's amazing. So back on track. So Willie is running against a corrupt government officials who've made it basically illegal for him to campaign against them in any real fashion. First CM, he is talking to a group of just regular people trying to tell them what's going on.
Right. Just the man on the street.
Yeah. So how would you describe Willie?
At the beginning of the movie, Willie is a teetotaler, so he doesn't drink. He lives in the rural part of Cahoma County. He has a wife, and he's teaching himself law. So he doesn't have money to go to college. He's just like reading law books in the evening with the idea that he will eventually take the equivalent of the bar exam in the future.
This relates to Long in some way because he got a special dispensation just to take the bar. He didn't like get a law degree. He just took the bar and passed.
He went to law school for 1 year. And then was allowed to take the bar exam.
That's crazy.
Passed.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you wonder like if anyone could really do that. It's just the freaking bourgeoisie keeping us down, making us spend our money on unneeded education.
Oh, well, we could talk about that later. So chief among Willie's complaints is that the county rejected a low bid on the construction of a school. And instead gave the bid to a relative of one of the city's leaders, whose brother manufactures bricks. And Willie claims that politicians are lining their own pockets. And he's not wrong.
Right. So they're cutting corners and things like that in the build.
Yeah. What was interesting and got glossed over in this scene is that Willie was starting to talk about how the person who owned the brick making factory was using convicts. That's even crazier. Think how much money they're upcharging for that.
Oh, so not just convicts, people who are still in jail.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, prison labor.
Yeah, that's terrible. That's really, really bad. While covering one of Willie's speeches, Jack sees the corruption firsthand. The political bosses, and those are Pillsbury and Tiny, they break up Willie's speech and then prevent his son from handing out pamphlets to everyone who's there. Basically, they're saying more than five people in one location is disturbance of the peace and you can't hand out flyers, which is insane to think that. Like, how can you even have any type of gathering if it's more than five people?
And they confiscate Jack's camera because he's taken mm-hmm. a picture of this going down. I mean, Jack gets it back later, but they've taken, interesting historical fact, the slate from inside the camera, which is, that's how cameras operated back then.
I'm sorry. I only know how my phone camera works, John.
Do you know how your phone camera works here?
No, I don't.
Yeah.
So later that night, Jack interviews Willie at his home, and we meet Willie's wife, Lucy, and their adopted son, Tom. And while they're eating dinner, someone throws a rock through Willie's front window.
I'm going to run. You're not going to stop me. I'm going to run even if I don't get a single vote.
Willie goes out and screams into the night that they can't stop him from running, and it's the first time we see that he has this anger in him. So, John, just what were you thinking when you saw this moment?
I think what we're seeing here and what they're setting up is that he's not afraid to go after the big dog in the political world. He knows he's up against tough odds, but he's going to try it anyway. No one's going to tell him that he can't do it.
Yeah, you start seeing his determination come through, and it's actually pretty inspiring. At the beginning of this movie, I was really into him, right? I was like, this guy is pretty awesome.
This is totally how we got our current president too, right? Like, someone was like, man, that guy shouldn't run. There's no way you'd win. And here we are.
Here we are on the verge of collapse. I shouldn't be so stark, but it's true.
It's really stark.
It's a good pun. So Jack is impressed by Willie, and he writes a series of articles that really praise the man. And when he finishes the articles, Jack goes on vacation to visit his family. We learn he comes from money, as we mentioned earlier, but we also meet some really critical characters to this story.
Just before we go on, I just want to talk about Jack's article. It's a very convincing article, and lots of people see it. Willie's kind of this rising political figure, in part because Jack does a very good job of writing up what is happening in rural Coloma County.
Yeah, and what they say, Willie is a honest man. They say that over and over and over until he's proven not an honest man.
Right. People believe he's an honest man.
Yeah, exactly. It's all about manipulating their brand. After Jack goes on vacation, we meet some people that are important to this story. And that's Judge Monty Stanton and Ann Stanton. Jack is clearly in love with Ann, and he admires the judge. We also meet Adam Stanton. That's Ann's brother and Jack's best friend. Ann and Jack definitely really have this thing going on between them. It's because they've lived next to each other their whole lives. He actually at one point asks her to wait for him as he, you know, goes off and does his thing.
A random note in the book, in the movie they say this too, that Jack doesn't know who his father is. He discovers in the book that the judge is in fact his father. His love interest, Anne, is actually like his sister or something like that.
Holy shit. That's awesome.
It does not go into that in the movie. They do not make any of those connections. They don't even say that. Although they make some mentions to a stepfather, never go into who the actual father is.
Meanwhile, Willie loses his bid to be treasurer, but he really gets politics into his blood. We are treated to the first of several montages through the film. During that time, Willie, with the help of his wife, becomes a lawyer.
I found this interesting. So one note is some things happen that keep Willie in the spotlight. And he's like, I'm not going to run for office or whatever. Then he ends up being the lawyer who tries the builder of the schoolhouse that was built with these cheap bricks because it more or less collapsed and killed a bunch of children.
The fire escape fell.
During a fire drill, right? Yeah. And the kids were on it, leaving the building. And a bunch of them died. So he ends up suing the county or city or whatever it is and wins. And then he's like making these speeches and writing these articles. People are starting to notice him.
Yeah.
Even though he keeps saying, I'm not going to run, people know he's going to run.
I think it's important to note throughout the film, Willie basically meets women, uses them for their knowledge, and then discards them. And this is an example of Willie going to Lucy first to learn how to read. But then she also coaches him through law school as well.
Oh, Lucy, his wife. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yeah. So interestingly enough, I looked this up because he's like, I have a bachelor of law. And I'm like, what the hell, a bachelor of law? Apparently, a bachelor of law was okay until the 1960s when it was replaced with a juris doctorate.
Huh.
You and I could have been lawyers in the 60s by just doing undergrad and then passing a test.
We are in the wrong time. That's not true.
Make America great again is what you're saying, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what I would say.
Take us back to the time where anyone could be a goddamn lawyer.
But it's kind of true. Like, think about it, in the Old West. You're just like, show up to a town. I'm a lawyer. Like, what?
Yeah, you could just say that. No one would know.
No one would know.
Like, here's a piece of paper that says it.
Did you write that yourself? Yeah. Yeah. Like, prove it.
Yeah. I took it to a printer.
So Willie gets famous. What happens is that there's a governor's race going on. I couldn't tell if it's the actual current governor or someone who's just running for governor, but he's a weak candidate. Realizes that by having Willie come into the race and split him and his opponent's ticket, he can become the governor. So they talk Willie into running, and they send Sadie Burke to guide Willie through this process.
Yeah, it works.
Jack is also sent to cover it.
Right. So the newspaper really liked Jack's original articles, and they were very popular. They're like, you know, Willie, let's send you on down there.
What we see is a bunch of really, really boring speeches. Willie getting up there, reading these pre-written speeches that have been coached by these people who don't want him to win. People are walking away as he's speaking, and he doesn't hold their attention. No one cares about figures and numbers.
And this is the advice that Sadie is giving him.
Yes, exactly.
She's a political strategist. She is the Kelly Ann Conway of her day. She's giving advice. Not all of it good advice, but intentionally so. She's basically paid to keep him off course, but messing up the opponent.
What these scenes made me think about was our current president and how much I might despise him. When you watch him speak, you're always entertained. That's not a good thing, but it is true. He's going to do something that you're just like, what the fuck? The more I watch him, the more angry I get, but he's always going to do something. He's an entertainer.
Yep.
Which is not great. Well, I'm getting sad doing this episode, John.
All right. So what happens from here is Willie realizes he's not going to win, and Jack and Sadie kind of clue him into the fact that he's a pawn in this political machine. And Willie's like, what the hell? I don't want to be a pawn in the political machine. Having never had a drink before in his life, Sadie's like, look, dude, just relax. You know, you're not going to win. You've been set up. I'm sorry. Have a drink. He doesn't just have one drink. He has like a whole bottle of booze.
Yeah.
And then totally hooks up with Sadie. Or it's really more Sadie hooks up with him.
Yeah. And it's implied, right? Like, because this is like pre-code stuff. When you see them next, like he's like passed out, but she's putting her lipstick on the mirror.
And she's like, I quieted him down. You're like, mm-hmm.
I tamed that lion.
Sadie has her way with him, and good for her. Willie the next day is like, he has one more speech to give. Jack, the reporter, wakes him up and says, hey, you know, you got to get out there and do this. It sucks that you now know that you're a pawn in the machine. What are you going to do about it? So Willie he tosses aside the dry speech he's been given, speaks from the gut, definitely not the brain, the gut, full of fire and brimstone, riles up the people.
Now listen to me, you hicks.
Yeah, you're hicks too, and they fooled you 1,000 times just like they fooled me. But this time I'm going to fool somebody. I'm going to stay in this race. I'm on my own and I'm out for blood. Now listen to me, you hicks. Listen to me and lift up your eyes and look at God's blessed and unfly-blown truth. And this is the truth. You're a hick. And nobody ever helped a hick but a hick himself. All right, listen to me. Listen to me. I'm the hick they were going to use to split the hick vote. But I'm standing right here now on my hind legs. Even a dog can learn to do that. Are you standing on your hind legs? Have you learned to do that much yet? Here it is. Here it is, you hicks. Nail up anybody who stands in your way. Nail up Joe Harrison. Nail up McMurphy. And if they don't deliver, give me the hammer and I'll do it myself.
He's like, I'm a dumb hick. You're a dumb hick.
We've been played as dumb hicks, the people who are in charge taking advantage of our stupidity. And here I am, one of those people. Didn't think I was going to get taken advantage of. Totally was.
Yeah, it's a good scene. This is what really hooked me on the film. Probably my favorite scene of the entire thing. How do you think this relates to current politics, John? Have we already touched on this a bunch?
Trump is not known for sticking to a speech for anything, no matter what the situation is, no matter how delicate the situation is. He basically just says whatever he feels like and usually talks about how much he hates the Justice Department and or Democrats, even if it's at a Boy Scout rally.
Yes. I guess one of the political narratives going on right now is that the middle class is feeling we are not being treated well by the current economic system. Because of that, Trump was elected as a pushback against.
Right. So, well, I mean, the feeling is always like, I'm a Washington outsider. Those people haven't done you justice in years and they're ignoring you. Vote for me. Everyone claims to be an outsider.
Yeah.
It's usually not the case.
Yeah.
Trump is actually a political outsider, but he's not an outsider to the power structure and being a person of means. So it's kind of bullshit.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
We don't have to really go into that because we'll see what happens in the midterm elections and if people are still seeing that.
Are you saying stay tuned to our next episode?
That's right.
So Jack is told by his editor to stop writing stories about Willie because the paper is controlled by his rivals. Jack's annoyed, so he quits.
Good for him, man. Stand by your values.
Yeah. Willie narrowly loses the race, but says that he's learned a big lesson, which is apparently do whatever you need to do to win. 4 years later, he runs for governor again on a populist platform and starts cutting deals with anyone and everyone to fund his campaign.
You know, this is where we start to hear rumors that he's kind of taken money from anybody. And people are questioning that, you know, even people he say he's working against. And he says something like, I'll work with anyone that's willing to give me money. There's no strings attached to any of these deals. You're like, I don't know if that's true.
Yeah, but there's some specific imagery that's evoked during his speeches.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, you see him standing above people, waving his arms around, being very emotional. These people have torches. It looks very much, you know, like rallies of the Third Reich. I don't know if that was intentional or not, but it does give that feeling.
I would assume that it was intentional, but, you know, I'm not quite sure. So Jack eventually meets up with Willie and is given a job as a political strategist. Jack introduces Willie to the judge, who Willie says he will make the attorney general. Again, Willie's running for governor. He needs judge's backing. So he's like, I'll make you the attorney general. And then with your help, I'll get enough votes.
Highly illegal, by the way. You definitely cannot offer positions like that in return for favors.
This whole movie is about corruption.
And then also just Jack's job is basically to dig up dirt. As a reporter, he's trained in research. Back at the time, that basically meant going to archives and places of public record and just combing through everything trying to find information. And basically, Jack keeps a little black book of everyone's sins. And Willie basically flips through it whenever he wants and then forces people to play ball.
It's called opposition research.
It's called blackmail also.
Yes, so, exactly. You know. So Willie wins the election. He starts enacting programs, and these include infrastructure. He builds a university football stadium. Again, we're not quite sure where, so we're just going to say university.
So just as a note, the movie's definitely filmed in California, because I actually looked it up. It's basically San Francisco.
Okay.
I mean, you probably know that, because you saw the Capitol building, right?
Yeah, I did.
And the outlying area.
But anyway, he starts enacting all these programs, and people start questioning at what cost. So he is making all these deals. He's doing whatever he can. He essentially will say anything or do anything to stay in power.
Who does that sound like?
I don't know.
And offering positions to family members and anyone who's his buddy. I don't know. So tell me more about the movie, Dave.
So it sounds like Huey Long. That's who it sounds like. And as you mentioned before, Huey Long is responsible for a massive increase in spending at LSU.
Yeah, so I mean, it's interesting that he may have bullied people into doing certain things, and there are probably a lot of people literally hurt, beat up, heads bashed in, but you can say, you know, he accomplished a lot of things that are probably good. Universities, hospitals, infrastructure building. His method for doing it, maybe not so good.
Yeah. As the movie progresses, Willie continues to accumulate power, and he continues a relationship with Sadie, but then ends that relationship so he can hook up with Anne. And that, remember, Anne's Jack's longtime crush.
And sometimes girlfriend.
Yeah.
It's basically, he's like, I see that. That looks like an upgrade to me. I'm going to ditch this one and go after that one.
Yeah, basically. Look at the timelines. His original wife taught him how to read, helped him go to law school. Sadie taught him how to be a political operative. Anne comes from money and has a lot of influence. He's just moving on up the ladder.
But he's still like associated with all these women and has to hang out with all of them in different capacities. Like Sadie is the person who's helping him win his campaign and like running large portions of this, making sure his image is good, and is mad at him because she's like, who is this other more attractive woman that he's gone after? And it's not just Anne. He's also hooked up with a series of women, some of them one night stands, some of them more long term. This dude's just sticking his dick in a hornet's nest because he's pissing off every woman in his life who basically holds some authority or helps him in some fashion, and they can just decide to stop at any point.
This also sounds like something familiar, John.
Huey Long, right?
Yeah, Huey Long. Yeah. I actually don't know about Huey Long. But it might sound like someone else. We'll just let that sit there.
Okay.
So Willie and the judge butt heads when a member of Willie's staff is caught stealing money from the people. The judge says that he should be tried and put into jail, but Willie says he's going to decide what to do with him. This man is Dolph Pillsbury, and he's a one-time rival. So Willie forces Dolph to write an undated resignation letter to keep him in line. The idea is, like, if you screw up again, I could kick you out of office at any moment.
Right, so he's literally got him in his pocket. And by literally, I mean the letter.
Yeah, exactly. When the judge and Willie fight, the judge is like, I'm resigning as your attorney general. You'll get my full resignation in the morning. In addition to that, the judge goes to all the newspapers and tells everyone exactly what happened. And people start calling for Willie to be impeached and tried for criminal actions.
So Willie's basically preventing justice from happening, allowing someone who was caught red-handed stealing from the people, allowing him to go free just because he's like his buddy.
The same thing that he railed against earlier.
It's like, and it's not even his buddy. It's really like he just controls the person because he can fire him whenever he wants because he has this letter written up.
Yeah. In response, Willie assigns Jack to track down dirt on the judge. Jack finds something, we're not quite sure what, and he refuses to turn that over to Willie. Jack does tell Anne about the judge's past and makes her promise not to show anyone else except for Adam. So remember, Anne and Adam are brother and sister.
Right, and he wants him to do this because Willie is trying to court this well-known political family, the Stantons, into positions in the state. He's trying to convince Adam to take an appointment to run a hospital. And Adam has basically refused, saying he doesn't think Willie's a trustworthy man. And once Anne has shown Adam what the judge has done in the past, Adam then just decides, you know what? My uncle did this thing in the past, but I think he's actually a good person. Maybe he isn't as bad as he seems. The judge did something wrong, but he still has a good moral compass. Maybe I'll take this position because I think a lot of good will come out of being in it.
So meanwhile, Willie's son, Tom, who we met beginning of the movie, crashes his car while drinking, and he ends up killing the young woman who is with him in the car.
Bad times.
Willie tries to bribe the young woman's father with a fat government contract, but learns that not everyone can be bought. Tom tells Willie that he deserves any punishment coming to him and to stop covering up for him. He's really racked about this. Tom then apologizes to the father, and a few days later, the father mysteriously disappears.
It's also clear that Tom knows who Willie really is, like the type of person he is. He's cheating on his mother. He's lying to people. He's covering up egregious acts that his buddies have done. He doesn't want anything to do with his dad, really. But unfortunately, he's really tied to him because it's his dad.
So Tom, he's still recovering from the car accident, and his father pushes him to go back to playing college football. Tom doesn't want to. He says he has a headache. After being hectored, he finally goes on the field. And he is tackled. He's seriously injured. He requires emergency surgery to keep him alive.
Twist. It's Adam, who's the surgeon, is at the hospital saying that this needs to be done. Willie doesn't really trust him still and has asked for a specialist to be flown in from another city. But it's going to take too long for the person to get there due to some weather issues. Tom's mother, Lucy, says, go ahead, Adam. We need you to perform this life-saving surgery. And Tom does, in fact, survive, but is paralyzed.
So Willie is brought up on impeachment charges for his many actions, and the father of the dead girl is found beaten to death. So they find his body.
Coincidentally, people are now accusing Willie of doing this too, because it's like a real convenience. He was seen at Willie's house. They know that Willie's son killed his daughter in a car accident. Now the guy's suddenly out of the way permanently.
Willie needs to convince various state senators to not impeach him. In order to do that, he goes to Judge Stanton, and the whole idea is to talk Stanton into telling his group to not impeach Willie.
So Willie and Jack go to the judge's house, and Jack tries to talk the judge into giving some support. Willie's waiting outside, decides to come in.
The judge says no, and Willie is like, I have some dirt on you.
Willie says he knows the secret information about the judge and will expose the judge. It'll make him look like a hypocrite if he doesn't come around. It will ruin the judge's legacy and political career. Still, again, don't really know what Judge Stanton did. It also seems that everyone related to this is now dead. It might even seem like the judge had something to do with that or accidentally did something.
Yeah, it's very unclear. I would have liked to know it.
If it's a parallel to the book, maybe it's secretly that Jack is his son and he's hooking up with his other daughter.
Oh, God. I mean, it's implied that he blackmailed someone. But it's just implied. I did have one comment about the judge.
Okay.
His scarf game is on point. Throughout the film, he wears light scarves. And I was like, man, I wish I could pull that off.
Why don't you?
I could maybe do an ascot. I'm not sure if I could do a scarf. Like, everywhere I go, I have a scarf tied around my neck, like a nice silk one. I don't.
Jack and Willie then decide to leave. The judge basically says, you know, I'll think about it. I'll tell you in the morning what my decision is. And Jack and Willie leave the judge's house on their way out. Adam and Anne arrive at the house. They ask Jack and Willie, why are you guys here? Adam's very suspicious. We then hear a gunshot in the judge's room. They rush back in. The judge has committed suicide.
I thought this was overdramatic, especially if we didn't know what he did. I really wanted to know what he did, and then I would understand what's going on a little bit better.
I mean, I guess I'll take that secret to his grave. Maybe it really is that he is Jack's father and never said anything when Jack was hooking up with his daughter.
Oh.
Yep. So Adam then confronts Jack after Willie leaves. Jack decides not to go with Willie. He's kind of done with Willie after that moment. Adam goes, Ann gave me the information that you dug up on the judge. Why did you give this to Willie? And Jack says, well, I actually kept my promise to Ann saying that I would never tell anyone what it is. So it's actually Ann, who had been sleeping with Willie, that had given up that information.
Afterwards, the impeachment trial begins, and Willie brings in a mob of people to intimidate everyone to vote against impeachment. He wins. He succeeds. They don't impeach him. As Willie is leaving the state house, Adam, who's grief-stricken, assassinates Willie, and then Adam is killed by Sugar Boy. Sugar Boy is a character who's in the background of everything. He's just a lackey. Jack says to Anne that, you know what, we have to go on living so Adam's life means something. What do you think he meant by that?
Jack's like, we have to let everyone know what Willie has done. He forced the judge to commit suicide, evil, mean things, corruption, stealing money. All these terrible things, because that's what Adam would have wanted. Adam wanted to basically end Willie from doing anything else because he was probably going to go on to the bigger stage president and be equally as corrupt in that position. I think that's what Jack meant. You know, it's their duty to let everyone know who Willie really was.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. And the film ends with Willie dying.
Could have been the whole world, Willie Stark. Whole world, Willie Stark. Why did he do it to me, Willie Stark? Why?
Scary.
It is scary. It's very scary.
So, Dave, why did this movie win?
I think Crawford did a really great job. I think his acting was very good. I also think that this movie was politically relevant still. The assassination had only happened like less than a decade prior. It was still fresh in people's mind. It's a well-done movie. It's not my favorite, but I recognize that it's good.
Just to make that clear, Dave is talking about Huey Long. Huey Long was also assassinated in a similar fashion. He said he was going to run for president. There's a lot of scandal going on in Huey Long's office, and someone then just offed him.
Yeah, there was a judge involved, but I'm not quite sure how.
I think same story to some degree. He was trying to convince the judge to do something the judge didn't agree with doing. And I'm not sure what happened to the judge. That judge may have committed suicide also.
We've talked about this a bunch during the film, but how does this film reflect today's politics?
I think there are some parallels to Willie and Trump. They are both demagogues, you know, playing on people's emotions, and both don't like any opposition. I think we even see at some point in the movie, Willie is trying to control the newspapers.
He owns one.
And all sorts of things like that. You know, I think we see a lot of that too, where Trump doesn't like anyone who says anything bad against him. He's like trying to rein Google in because bad things come up about him when people search his name. It's all of that.
Yeah, I think that's a good answer. Sitting here, it makes me think about how there have been demagogues in the past, and there'll probably be demagogues in the future. We already know how this plays out in some way. Like, it gives me a little bit of hope. This ends, right? Like, it doesn't have to go on.
I think at a certain point, people realize that they're full of hot air, and a lot of what they're saying is bullshit. That's kind of why people finally gave up on him. In this instance, like, somebody ended up assassinating him. In a way, it's like, that man was really dangerous. It might have been the president at the time, and I forget who that was, said that Huey Long was like one of the most dangerous men in America, given how he runs things and the number of people who are influenced by him.
I think that was FDR. I know that FDR took some of Long's ideas and folded it into the New Deal as a way to neuter Long. I read his history bio today. That's how I know that.
Nice. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy to think people were really worried about what he said about things. We see some of that in Myanmar also right now, with social media being abused. So you've got this extremist Buddhist monk who's basically saying the Muslims in Myanmar are dangerous and dirty and all these other things. People are taking that to heart. They're just reading it and being like, yeah, those dirty Muslims in Myanmar, and killing them. So that those are the Rohingya. I don't know if you guys are following that in the news. That's happening right now. Mark Zuckerberg is like, you're right, I got to put a stop to this, and has basically kicked that extremist monk off of Facebook. We're seeing this play out in other places too. And this gets back to media literacy. Dave and I talk about media literacy every now and again. When people say something, doesn't always mean it's true. It's your job to use your critical thinking abilities and look stuff up on the internet. So it's like you should listen, but then validate.
So what are some of the themes that this movie touched on? I think we talked about this a little bit already. What does power cost you?
It's also like, at what cost is it worth achieving your goals? So your son is paralyzed. Your wife has left you. Everyone in your inner circle hates you. But, you know, you've managed to build a university, hospitals, roads. People are literate in your state. Those kind of things. But everyone hates you. Like, is that worth your goal? And you've like compromised yourself in so many different ways by taking money from all sorts of political rivals and other people that you would have disagreed with had they not been giving you money.
And ultimately, the movie comes down on the side of no, I guess, because it's a tragedy.
Yeah, he ends up dead. Everything he built basically fell apart around him at that impeachment trial, more or less. Even if he won, he still lost.
Are there any other themes that we might want to discuss?
No.
Okay. I couldn't think of anything.
We'll leave it up to you, listeners. Like, let us know if you've seen this movie. What are your feelings on it and Trump or the other political leaders? How do you manage someone who says things like this and is as powerful as he is and is trying to silence media?
So, John, ultimately, do you think this is a winner or a wiener?
I think it's a winner. Actually, I watched the movie a couple of times. I think the first time I was doing something and kind of missed the beginning. I think it can be slow in parts, but by and large, it's good.
We both agree on this. I think it can be a little bit boring, but it is a good film. The second time I watched it, I liked it better than the first. That first time I was like, I'm a little bored. That could be because it's a little hard sometimes to catch what is going on. Like with Pillsbury, like he comes in the second act and you're like, wait, what? He was in the first act?
Yeah, so that's a character who shows up for like 30 seconds early on in the movie. And then if you don't remember what he looks like, you know, he shows up like an hour and 30 minutes later for like another 30 seconds. And you're like, that's that guy.
Yeah. So porn name. What is the porn name?
Yeah, I say Slick Willy fucks everyone and then gets fucked.
I mean, that sounds like a tagline. I had all the king's men. I think I like yours better. I like Slick Willy. That's funny.
So Slick Willy was the name that was given to Bill Clinton.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
It's time to move on to our feedback section. If you would like to send us feedback, you can. Ryan from Nashville, this is a discussion about what we talked about in our last episode about the movies that we think are going to be nominated for an Oscar. He wants to know our thoughts about Roma. And just to catch everyone up, Roma is a Netflix movie. It is projected at this time to be the winner of the Best Picture Award. He wants to know what we think about films that appear on Netflix and not in wide release.
I mean, I haven't seen the movie, so I can't say too much about it. It's not out on Netflix yet. It's been released in LA County or whatever, and it's going to be in theaters for a few weeks so that it is eligible to be nominated for an Oscar. I am all about the quality of the movie. So if it's a very good movie, it should be considered, whether it's a direct-to-VHS release or anything else. So if it's a really good movie, it deserves some attention. What I see here is Hollywood doesn't like non-Hollywood movies, right? It's a non-Hollywood studio doing it with their own crew and some other things. It's stupid to try to fight the changing tide. You know, now there are these other movie production studios, Amazon, Netflix, Hulu, all those things are non-Hollywood. And they have the money to do it, and they're producing quality things. I think if Hollywood doesn't start recognizing these movies, the Oscar viewership is going to continue to decline. Because again, people are shifting their movie watching experience away from the theaters. I think if you have a good TV and sound system, you don't even need to go to the theater.
So I agree with you, John. I really like going to the movies because I like
the reclining.
Yeah,
fancy chair.
I like just like being there, a giant screen. But that shouldn't stop films that are good from being eligible for the Oscars. If a movie is good, I don't care how I saw it ultimately. I just want to know if I enjoyed it or not. I think your point about if they don't do this, the Oscars are continuing to decline, you're 100% correct on that. Like, this seems like a really no-brainer to me. You let these movies in because you know there's a wide audience who's already seen them, and it'll probably drive up discussion about the movies.
Again, I just think Hollywood's kind of behind the times with realizing how people want to consume movies. So if you can do it, you'll do it at home on your own time, and you can pause the movie when you need to go to the bathroom. So I think their idea of what a movie-going experience is like is outdated and needs to change. Who wants to go to Blockbuster to rent a movie now when you can stream it online, basically? It's like the convenience factor.
Yeah. So I think we're in agreement. And Ryan, if you don't agree with us, just let us know. Or if you have thoughts, you can send us a note.
Or if we didn't answer your question at all because we didn't understand it, let us know.
I mean, it's pretty easy. It's like, movie's good. More movies.
Well, I mean, Ryan, on that note, I am looking forward to seeing Roma. There are a couple other movies. They're not even released yet. I live in D.C. I think We Are the Animals is one that was getting a lot of attention. It's not playing anywhere around here as far as I know.
I'm going to see A Star is Born probably this week. I'm dreading it. I really don't want to see that movie, but I'm going to do it for you guys.
I'm going to wait to see if that gets nominated for anything.
Well, definitely going to get nominated for Best Actress. Anyway, what is up next? We have, it's an audience pick, so you guys get the vote. It's The Worst is the theme. So these are the...
Wait. What's up next is Tom Jones, right?
Yes, it's Tom Jones.
So what's up next is Tom Jones. But while Dave and I are getting through that movie, he is going to tell you what you're going
to
vote on.
Yes, you get to vote on The Worst. So these are the movies that are left for us to watch that have the lowest Rotten Tomatoes rank. The first one is Cavalcade. Cavalcade is the triumphs and tragedies of two English families, the upper crust Marats, and the working class Bridges from 1899 to 1933. It sounds boring.
I can't wait.
The other one is Around the World in 80 Days. That's the tale.
With Jackie Chan.
The one with Jackie Chan. You know, it won an Oscar.
Is it a Wilson that's in that one
yes,
also?
Yes, it is. This is the original Around the World in 80 Days. That's just like the famous book. Professor has to go around the world in a hot air balloon in 80 days, and he gets into hijinks. There you go. Yeah, those both have very, very low ratings. So.
I feel like when I was a kid, I watched Around the World in 80 Days and like kind of liked it.
Oh, you used to watch a lot of bullshit when we were kids and like it. We didn't know better.
Could be true.
I mean, it has to be true.
I don't know. I mean, I feel like I did. I think I liked it.
Well, I will make a bet that movie is going to be the one that ends up winning. Because everyone knows about it. That's what I found out when we do these votes. The movie that people know typically wins. Oh, wait, I do have one more thing, John. Guess what? We have another review.
We're like up to 15 reviews on...
No, 15? Who are you kidding? We're at 13.
Oh, 13. 13 reviews on iTunes or whatever?
Yeah, in October, lucky number 13.
All right. Was it a good review?
It was a 5 out of 5.
Ooh.
They left no feedback, so...
I think... Is that one of our friends stuffing the ballot because they don't want to become our Titan-level patron?
I don't... Yeah, maybe. So if you liked our podcast, there's a couple things we would love for you to do. Rate us on iTunes, 5 out of 5. Write us a little note. You'll help us get to our Titanic goal. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram, or you could email us at john@awardwieners or david@awardwieners.
Maybe we'll post a picture of Donald Trump's little hands stuffing a hot dog in his face.
Eating it like corn.
Eating it in a weird way. It's like he's playing a flute, man.
How do you fuck up eating a hot dog? Anyway, listeners, thank you so much. Don't forget to get out and vote.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the Schaefer Award Theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner, because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run, or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on a rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.